Well, thank you everybody for coming out to listen to a dead guy talk. But yeah, my name is Vinny Tolman, Vinny Todd Tolman, and I did have a near-death experience. On January 18th will be my 20th anniversary since my death. So coming right up on my 2 decades since my experience. But the beautiful aspect to this experience is it hasn't faded even to an inkling, not even a little bit. From the very beginning, it's stayed clean to me, and it's kept that fresh experience to me, almost to a perfect recall. Like anytime people have questions, it's almost like I can just go back and be there mentally and re-experience it. And actually, a saving grace for me is meditation. On a regular basis, I do take myself there in meditation, take myself to that sacred space, that our real existence, this is not the real existence. And so, yeah, back in 03, I aspirated in a Dairy Queen and was in a locked bathroom when the manager of the restaurant was prompted to, by a patron to go ahead and open that restaurant bathroom. And there he found a dead body. And at this point, I was watching it from above. It wasn't me, because what was me was up here watching what was going on down below me. So for sure, it couldn't be me. Me was witnessing, what was going on above. And so I'm watching this body and watching a medic team come and process the body, put it in a body bag, and they haul it away. And as they're pulling away from the restaurant, there was a brand new rookie medic, and he was sitting in the back of the ambulance. And I actually saw a light start to form around his heart area, his heart space. And that light got bigger and bigger. And as it did, I felt an actual force where I was sitting and watching all this happen to me. I felt this force go over me, over my shoulder. And a very audible, clear voice said, "This one's not dead." And this rookie medic heard that, and he was looking around and thought that maybe this was a joke, that the other medics maybe were playing on him, and realized pretty quick that it wasn't a joke. But he lacked the courage to necessarily do anything about it. He's a brand new guy. What's he going to do about it? He doesn't know much. He knows this body's in a bag and that everyone else has given up on it. And then that light, it started to expand, and it went from well below the heart area and went into the head space. And this light just got brighter, literally brighter, and it felt like it was coming from inside of him. And this audible voice was even louder the second time and said very strongly, "This one's not dead." And with him hearing that, he felt he had to take action. He had to. So he went ahead and he unzipped the very top of the body bag. And he started feeling around on the neck. Now, bear with me. This is a very disgusting experience from his perspective. And I'm actually feeling the, like from where I'm at, I'm actually feeling the feelings he feels as he's doing this stuff. But he's feeling all over the neck, and he feels how gross that it feels. But yet he feels he has to do something about it. And he doesn't feel anything, no pulse. The body's cold, literally cold to the touch. The last recorded temperature when they put the body in the bag was 79 degrees. Stiffness had started to set in. And so it was a dead body. It wasn't a live body. But he still felt that push of what he experienced with that loud voice. So he felt under the arm. And again, the body's covered in vomit, essentially. And he feels his hand getting gross as he's doing this. And still no pulse. Then he moved down to the thigh area, and on the inner thigh, there's an artery there, and he was feeling for that artery. But as he was pushing, he actually made contact with the femur bone. And when he made that contact with the femur bone, where I was sitting watching all of this happen, I felt a spark to me where I was. And he felt a spark to him where he was. And still, to me, I'm a little slow to put two and two together. I still didn't put together that was my body. I just felt that was different. That was weird. But I felt that spark. He felt that spark. But that spark was enough for him that he needed to start the process of resuscitating the body. So he did. He undid the rest of the straps on the body itself, because again, it was strapped down real tight in a body bag. Undid those straps, started the process of resuscitating the body, even put the defibrillator sensor things on the body. As he was doing so, and he charged the first charge for the defibrillator, it makes a loud ringing beep. And until this loud ringing beep, the other two medics, they had no idea what was going on. They were, you know, they weren't paying attention to what was going on behind them. This rookie medic sitting in the back of the ambulance in the jump seat, in the rookie seat. So he goes ahead and he shocks the body as the alarm goes off that the defibrillator is going to shock the body. As that's going off, the other two medics look back and they start just chastising him. They're telling him he's going to get fired. You're an idiot. You can't do this. You could get arrested. They just said all sorts of things to him, but it didn't dissuade him at all. In fact, it almost charged him forward. That first round of shocks, there was no heartbeat, but he went ahead and went to a second round. And in the second round, there was a single heartbeat, just one. And then it was back to flatline. And by then, the veteran medics kind of shut their mouths and kind of quieted up, and they were just participating and watching to see what was going to happen. Then the third round of shocks happened. And with the third round, it was a steady but very faint heartbeat that started for the body. And again, to me, this wasn't my body. My body was, again, up here watching all of this happen down below me. And so I watched this body come back. I feel the joy that this medic has. I feel like the excitement of the energy of the two medics as they radio ahead to a hospital, which happened to be only a block and a half away. So when all this happened and the heart actually stopped, like literally a block and a half away, it was a hospital. So they were able to meet right away a trauma team with the body. Well, they get to this hospital. This is Timpanogos Hospital. They get there and they offload the body. They're transferring it from the ambulance gurney into an actual hospital bed or gurney. As they're doing that, the body is coming back. And as it's doing so, it starts going into seizures and it's foaming. It's quite a gross thing to witness. And I was witnessing it again from above. And as I was witnessing that, I saw that they were having a hard time controlling the body as they transferred it into the hospital bed. So they started to strap the body itself down. They started with the legs and they put some leg straps. Then they went to the arms. They got the right arm strapped down. Then as they went to the left arm, I'm left-handed. As they did that, I felt where I was, somebody was strapping my arm down. And that was the first inkling that of really understanding what was going on, this relationship between me, where I was, and this body that I was witnessing. I felt really silly. I felt really dumb because I watched as I pulled and restricted. I resisted this strap that she was putting down on the arm, and I watched the body break the strap. I watched it completely come free, and I felt like I got my arm free. And then she rushed and grabbed a leg strap and actually put it on the arm and forced it back down. As she did that, I had this reckoning that I was an idiot. How could I be witnessing all of this and not know what I was watching was my own body right below me? Like I really did. I felt so dumb. Like, how could this be happening? How could I not know that was my own body? And at this point, fear, which is real there, it's very real there. It started to smother me. It started to come down on me like a darkness. And this fear, it felt like it was going to put me out, like put my existence out. Like the light that I was, the little light I had there, I felt like it was going to put me out. And as I did, I felt this, the most beautiful feeling. And this is the, I always have a hard time with this part because our words can't describe what this is. And I felt this warmth. It started from behind me. Now, again, mind you, I'm feeling so much fear. I'm feeling smothered by this fear, this ignorance that I felt. Like, how could you not know you're dead? And I started to feel this warmth behind me. And this warmth is something I didn't deserve. This warmth is just given to all of us. And this warmth It's love that we don't get to experience here. We can take our best moments here and they're nothing compared to this. And I got to feel for a few moments, this all permeating white love, this unconditional love. And it completely shifted me and it sent all the fear away from me. Like it literally bolted it away from me. And now all of a sudden I was surrounded by light and I turned, I knew the light was coming from behind me. I knew it wasn't coming from in front of me, from all that hardship that I was witnessing. So I turned around and I see like the movie version of God. I see this guy all dressed in white, long white beard, very, very pink skin. His skin was so pink that it glistened. It glistened like the beach sand in the sunlight. It was beautiful. And this being emulated light, like truly light came from inside of him. And the first thing I asked is, I said, "Are you God?" And he just smiled. He just smiled like this very loving smile and said, "No, I'm not God." And of course, my next response is, "Well, then you must be Jesus." And he said, "No, I'm not Jesus either." And he said, "I'm not Jesus, son, but my name's Drake and I'm here to be your guide." And the amount of love that he expressed, again, there's no words here, but I was raised in a very imperfect home. And I had an amazing angel of a mother and a pretty good dad, but he had a lot of shortcomings and he tended to impose those on me throughout my whole life. And I had a lot of black holes inside me. Energetically, I had a lot of darkness inside me. But the love that this guy showed me, it was all gone. Like in a second, an entire lifetime of abuse, gone, washed away in a second. And this love is real. This is the real love that we get to have there. And it's just the beginning of the transition for us. And so I embraced it. I loved that feeling, that cleanliness, that ability to move past, away from my past and away from the things that I had experienced as a kid. I was able to abandon my own darkness. And as I did, my guide, Drake, he explained to me that his purpose was to help me. He was either going to help me go back to where I had just come or go forward where he could show me what's next for me. What's the next part of my life? And of course, there's no chance I wanted to go back. I mean, why? After experiencing even a second of this love, there's no chance you'll ever want to go back. And so I said, "I want to go with you wherever you're going. I don't care if it's to another Dairy Queen." No, just kidding. But I knew I wanted to go with him. Wherever he was going to go, I wanted to go with him. So I did. I opted. I embraced his energy. And he helped me understand that to get to heaven, to where we were going, he didn't call it quite heaven. He called it our destination. But he said to get there, we had to not just travel from point A to point B. We had to travel from lower understanding to higher understanding. But not just that. He helped me understand that the existence of our love frequency here is very low. And the existence of the frequency or love there is very high. So he was going to have to help me transfer or understand or educate myself from point A to point B, but lower style of lower frequency of thinking to higher frequency of thinking. And again, it's hard to say in words how he's explaining all this, but we're not using any words whatsoever. This is 100% complete, just understanding each other through the whole process. We never used a word the entire time. We understood each other. The second I would have a question, the answer would be coming to me, the very second I had it. And with this interchange, you have the ability, just like with the internet we have here, the ability to interchange data, understanding is so quick, so fast. So I was able to go and elevate my understanding very, very quickly. But this was a funny part for me because, you know, I was raised my whole life LDS, and raised Christian. And yes, they are facilitated to each other, Christian LDS. And I want you to know, I thought that there was going to be some type of fast track for us Mormons, that we were going to, oh, we must have like the power escalator that gets you right there. I legitimately was like looking around, well, where's my fast track? Because I already have everything I need. I know that that's how we get to heaven, is I already have all the knowledge. And he just laughed at me, and not in a ridicule way, but a loving way. He laughed like you would laugh at a little child who's, you know, holding a little toy airplane, saying they know how to fly for real. And it's like, no, I didn't know how to fly for real. I needed to really embrace his understanding to understand the true vastness of God and the true vastness of life. And that was one of the first things I had to understand, is how vast life is here, that we only get to see the very tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg here in this third dimensional realm. But existence is so much larger than our brains can understand. There's life everywhere in the universe. It's all permeating. Everywhere there is God, there is life in the universe. And the universe is so vast. It's larger than our brains can comprehend. And there's beings and people everywhere. And that Earth is a gathering of all the different energies. And one of the first things I had to understand was I had to be my true, authentic self. And I thought I was. I really thought, especially through this little baby experience of peeling away my darkness, my own past, and embracing this new light, this new love, I thought that I was very authentic. And I wasn't. I wasn't. I still had a whole lot of prejudices, a whole lot of judgments of others that were programmed in me, not from my faith, but from my culture. And they're very opposite of each other. Unfortunately, the culture that I was raised in is opposite of the faith I was raised in. Even though they go hand in hand, I was believing the culture, but not following the truth of the faith, of my own faith. And I was judging. I was putting labels on everybody, including myself. I believed that life was a win, lose, or draw. It was a pass or a fail. I felt that life must be just a test, because that's what I believed growing up. And in my authentic moment, I had to realize that energetically, I knew nothing, that we are allowed to grow in ignorance here so that we can learn the power of decision, learn the power of agency. Because if we had all knowledge, we wouldn't have to necessarily use so much agency. We wouldn't have to use so much free choice to learn and to grow. And so I did. I learned the power of authenticity. And I had to authentically learn that as I pointed out the faults in others, that I was truly pointing out a fault in someone else, but I was pointing out what I believed was a fault in God as I pointed up. And as I pointed out those faults in others, I was pointing out three faults in myself. That in authenticity, I can't make a judgment of anybody. That's not my position here. My position here is to learn and to grow and learn the power of agency and how to create with agency. And that was my purpose here, not to pass or fail, not to be classified, but to truly learn the power of creation through agency. And so I did. I started to embrace this new energy of authenticity. And I realized that growing up, that there was a version of myself that I allowed out when I would go to church. There was a version of myself that I allowed out when I'd go visit mom. There was a version of myself when I would be on the construction site doing my work. Well, I also, you know, had previously worked on movie sets, so I would have a different version of myself that would show up to the set. So I had all these different versions of myself, but they weren't unified in one being. And what Drake did is he helped me stitch all these pieces together and realize that they were one aspect, one being, But I had to peel away all these outside layers of who I believed I was and be my authentic self. But that was the first and most important principle for him, which it's really funny because you would think it must be love. It must be something stronger. But the reason why authenticity was so important for me to understand is because until I could be authentic, I can't love. Until I can be authentic, I can't learn to be loved. And authenticity was the paramount, the foundation of learning here. And for me to truly be loved or to love someone else, I first had to be my authentic self. And so Drake led me through that process of fully understanding what it is to be your authentic self. And in essence, he helped me understand the purpose of life from there, the power of love and the importance of love, and how that when we are in heaven before this existence here, we are so close with God that God's extreme power and light is so all permeating that anything God wanted, we wanted. We didn't have separate thought from God because we were existing where God is, and we were synchronized so much to God that anything God wanted, we wanted. And so God saw this and saw that we weren't learning, we weren't growing, we weren't learning the power of creation. And the same way that we have to here, when we have our own kids, we have to allow them to have some distance to learn the power of agency. Same thing for us. We had to learn the power of distance, where as a distant to God, we could discover and find and seek out God, seek out that love, using our agency and using our choices and using the power of creation. We can discover and find God daily, but we get to do it. Not because we're so close to God, we just automatically want to, but we get to. And so I learned the beginning principles of what this whole existence is all about. And it would take, you know, hours and hours just to talk literally about the 10 basic principles that Drake separated out for me. And I say training wheel style. He really had to like dumb a lot of them down for me because I again thought I had this fast track to heaven, and he kept having to reel me back saying, you're not on the fast track. And in a loving way, not a judgmental way, he wanted to step to my side and facilitate my growth using that just tremendous love. This guy could just pour this love out. And for a lot of people that they have a hard time that I didn't have my experience and meet God, and I didn't have my experience and meet Jesus. But to me, I would argue that I did. I experienced that love that God has for every single one of us. And I can truly say I didn't deserve even the smallest amount of that love. I mean, I'd done some pretty good things, but I'd done some pretty bad things too in my life. And I felt that the bad far outweighed the good by the time that I had my experience. And I discovered God there. God was there between the lines. God was the love that I was feeling. And I felt the presence of God through the whole process. And as I'm learning these principles, we're moving from point A to point B. And as I would have a hard time accepting a certain principle, we would start slowing down. I would literally feel the slowing of our movement till I would embrace the principle. And I wouldn't have to fully say, okay, I embody this principle. I would just have to be willing to accept that it was possible as a truth for myself. As long as I was willing to accept it was a possible truth for me, then we could continue our progress. But we went through this whole traveling through vast, vast distances. And to equate it to physical terms here, you couldn't. You're traveling distances that we can't measure with our math currently that we have. And as I'm getting to what I can see is what I think is heaven, I'm seeing a light off in this distance. As we approach it, I recognize that the light is actually coming from inside the planet. Like the planet itself exudes light. Light comes from this planet. Whereas here, light is experienced as a reflection. Light, you know, reflects from the sun to us. And that's how we see light here. But there, everything there has light within, and it comes out of it to us. That's how we experience it. And that's why the colors are so different there, is the colors are so vibrant. We don't get to experience those colors here because you would actually have to be light coming out of the item itself to experience these colors. That's why they're so bright and different than anything we have here, anything. And just even break down a blade of grass. If I could get you to comprehend a blade of grass in heaven, we probably would just turn into a puddle of tears right here, honestly. Because just the grass itself, it's such a simple, beautiful purpose that this grass exists to love us. And the grass itself has its own frequency, has a music, a tone that comes off of it, has a smell. The smell, you can actually taste the grass. And you taste, and if you ask me, what does it taste like? I'd say love. Because you can actually taste love coming off of just the grass. And as I touch down in this grass, I can actually plug into it the same way that you would maybe plug into the internet here, but it's an energetic thing. I could plug into it. I could feel and have interchange understanding with the grass. And again, this is just grass. There was just beautiful trees and flowers and water. Oh my gosh. The healing power of this water there is just, you, again, no words can describe it here. But I got to experience all of this, and I got to experience, I call it the baby version of heaven. They put me down in a safe space where I couldn't mess things up, and I'm looking around and I can tell everything's off in the distance, so I couldn't really mess stuff up, but I could really experience heaven. And at any moment that I wanted to know more about something, my consciousness was literally brought from where I was to instantly there. And I would be on the flower petal, like the size of a bee, and experiencing that flower the way a bee would experience a flower. And then boom, I would be back in my presence where I was originally. And that's how everything was there. That with the loving desire for something, the love that's there would facilitate you instantly to understand it, instantly to get there and fully embrace the experience of it. And as I'm there experiencing all of this, my guy Drake, he gets in front of me, and this whole time he had always placed himself to my side or behind me through the whole process, like a best friend would, to my side or behind me to support me and to lovingly guide me where I wanted to go and learn. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, he steps in front of me. And it kind of caught me off guard. And as he did it, he said, Vinny, this is going to be really hard, but it's going to be worth it. And he gave me this hug where he brought his presence, who he was, the core of who he was. And he brought it together with the core of who I am. And it was like nuclear fission. It was just so much power in this hug. And I felt like the light of the universe was there in this hug. I felt so strong God's love for me, and I don't deserve it. I felt so strong that the love that God has for all of us. And then I could hear the voice of my brother from here, my third dimensional brother. He was giving a prayer or a blessing to my physical body. Now, fast forward, I'd been in a coma for 3 days. So they had brought my body back and I was in a coma, brain dead, essentially, with very little brain activity, almost zero, just above zero, for 3 straight days. And I had gotten 3 of these blessings. This was the third one. And this one was given to me by my brother, who we've always, I mean, my cousins are right here. They'll we put lots of holes in walls, and most times it was each other's heads that we were ramming through walls. We had a very hard upbringing to each other. We got in lots of fights, but we also were oil and vinegar, that together we made some magic sometimes. And I could feel this brother that I didn't think had any qualm or care for me in the world. And I could feel how much he was suffering, that I was here in this coma. And I could feel that love he had. And it chimed and connected to that love that Drake had for me. And at that point, I was forced back to my body. I didn't have agency anymore. It was removed from me. And it was the love that my brother had for me that as he gave me this prayer, this blessing, it forced me back into my body. And to me, this happened right around 9:30, 10 at night. And I woke up at 1 a.m. almost on the dot. They could see all the equipment and started freaking out right at about 1:11 a.m. I woke up and yanked all the sensors off me. I was extremely, extremely claustrophobic. And one of the reasons why I was so claustrophobic is where we exist in our real existence, it's nothing like these little bodies here. And not that I have a little body, but I'm telling you, like there, our spirits are way larger than these physical frames. We're bigger than Shaquille O'Neal. We are huge. Our spirits are huge. And for us to come back into these bodies, they're rammed in. It's very hard to bring that spirit form, bring it back into the physical body. And as it happened to me, I was just extremely claustrophobic. I woke up, pulled everything off of me, pulled the catheters out of me, pulled the diodes off of me. I couldn't even have fabric touching my skin. I felt like I was going to burn up. I felt so much just energy on me. I couldn't have anything touching me. So I just stood there and just taking these deep breaths and all these alarms going off. And I realized all these alarms are going off. And me being the smart guy, I went and unplugged all the equipment, so which just got the nurses there faster. So I'm thinking, okay, good. Got the alarms to stop. I'm still just standing there naked. Like I can't have anything touching me. And then realize, well, I'm naked. I got to get something around me. So I grabbed a gown that I found, grabbed it and wrapped it around me. And I went hauling off running, went running away from my room. And here I am, I'm trying to get out of there. For some reason in my brain, I think I can just leave. And so here I am, I'm at the elevator, I'm hitting the down button. And I hear screaming. I look down the hall and I see the nurse come running out of the room screaming. And then I see the other nurse go running in, and she's yelling at the original nurse. They both come out in the hallway. They're looking both directions. They both look at me and then they both scream. And then I was like, oh man, I've been had. So I knew I had to come back. They forced me back in the room. They wanted to put all the equipment back on me. I wouldn't let them. The only thing I would allow them was this little oxygen sensor on my finger. And it was just because as soon as they look away, I'd pull it off. I just couldn't have anything touching me, nothing. And so I was essentially forced to stay there until I could sign all the paperwork, just pages and pages and pages of paperwork, releasing the hospital of liability, allowing myself to leave. And they had to get specialists signed off on neurology and cardiology. And there's a respiratory person and a urologist. They had all these specialists that had to sign off. So essentially from 1 a.m. till about 6 a.m, we were signing paperwork. They had all these questions. I was, you know, what day is it? What's your name? I was off on days. I was off by 3 days. To me, it, you know, in my consciousness, I woke up not remembering any of this magical experience. I actually didn't remember it at all. But I did remember that I was planning on going and working out with a buddy of mine, and it was very foggy about how I got to this hospital. So everywhere I went, though, people kept saying, "You're the miracle boy. You're the miracle boy. You were dead," you know. And so I listened to him. I didn't debate him or anything. I didn't know. And so we got all the paperwork signed. I left the hospital. And 3 days later, my sister, she wanted to take me out to dinner. Tammy, she took me out to dinner. And she kind of cornered me at this restaurant and said, "You know you were dead, right?" And I go, "Yeah, that's what everybody tells me. I'm the miracle boy." I'm like, "I don't feel like a miracle. I missed 3 days of work and I didn't get to do that workout and I missed the car show. I was planning on going to a car show." I'm like, "I don't feel like the miracle." And she's like, "Well, you were dead. You were pronounced dead." And And I just sat there and thought about it for a second. And then she goes, did you have any experience? Did you have an out-of-body experience? My mouth went to form the words no. And as I went to go say the words no, this entire experience unfolded inside me. And it happened like the door was, it was always there. I just had to have somebody kick the door open for me to remember it. And all of a sudden I remembered it all, everything, so vivid, everything, the entire experience. I remembered watching my body die and watching him try to bring it back and think that, no, it's dead. I remembered everything from the beginning to the end, including my guide. And me being who I was, I thought, you're crazy. You're crazy as hell. And so I thought that for a while. I did. For a few weeks and a few days, I thought I was crazy. I went and started experiencing life in a different way. There were so many things around me that I didn't know that were going on. I could still have a little bit of this lingering of I would understand people's thoughts without them saying words around me. I still have it a little bit. But conveniently, it turns off when I'm being told to do things at home. But I had this knowing of things, and it was so weird because it was things that were happening, and it was almost like God was giving me these little tests, drops in the bucket to help me understand that this experience was real. And I actually met with a couple of professionals to see if maybe I was delusional, and had an experience where spirit came through very, very strongly with one of these men and told me to say some things. And I said, okay, we'll see what happens. And I went ahead with and followed what the spirit was telling me to do. And as I did, it freaked the guy out. And later he called and apologized and said, hey, you know, whatever happened to you, there's some legitimacy to it. He says that his field of medical practice doesn't explain it. So he couldn't explain it, but he said that I needed to pursue figuring out how to be okay with it, figuring out how to be okay that this happened. And so fast forward, I start living my life, and I was very depressed for a long time. Because if you can imagine having an experience like this and then being forced back to this world, then you realize there's only one hell, and that's here. Like, this is hell. And as far as the grand scheme of things, it only gets better from here. And I was having the hardest time with getting back to normal life. And I wasn't normal anymore. Everything was different for me. My understanding, my beliefs, who I was, I had to understand that I'd been inauthentic my whole life. And I had to start rebuilding myself authentically for the first time in real life. I had to start living the way that I knew I was supposed to live from my experience. Well, fast forward even further, and I get invited to this little reunion up in Afton, Wyoming. And I a lot of you have read the book, you're going to understand this. I go to this reunion, and I get to see the history of the town. And about 5 or 10 minutes into this presentation this high school is putting on about this town, I see my guide. And he comes up on this large screen, and I saw him like, whoa, I couldn't speak. And then my wife, she was my fiance at the time, she goes, that's him. That's your guide. And I couldn't speak. I was frozen. I felt frozen. I had to leave. I literally had to leave there right then. I couldn't function. But come to find out that my guide, you know, spoiler alert, close your ears if you don't want to hear this, that he is my great, great, great grandfather on my grandmother's side. But I'd never seen his picture before. And I have an aunt that she's just amazing. Their mom is amazing at like ancestry and putting all this stuff together. And I'd never seen his photo before. And here he was in the real life. And he was my guide. And what's funny though, is in this life, he was officially named Charles D. Kazare. But those who knew him knew he went by Drake. And that's what I'll always know him as. And he's still my guide to this day. He even has really helped Lynn over there. Lynn's my rider that has made this whole thing possible. And then Rick over here is our publisher. And, you know, Richard Paul Evans, this would not be possible without him. And I want to just express my gratitude to these amazing men and their families, and Diane too, because all of this, Diane was the squeaky wheel that got Rick to listen to my audio version of what happened. Otherwise we wouldn't be here right now experiencing this. And I want you to know, since the second I came back, I felt very strongly that this is a personal experience, but it did need to be shared. And the reason it needed to be shared, it's not for everybody. And I'm not one to profess this is everybody's truth. No, this is my truth. And I share it in the earnest effort that if it connects to you, see where it connects to you. It might be a truth for you. But I want you to know that that I live differently now. I'm not the same person that I was back then. I am very, very different. And a lot of people who knew me before and know me now, they express that. They say, you know, you're, to be frankly, like, you used to be a douchebag, you know? I'm like, yeah, I was. I was a jerk. I was very egotistical and very selfish with the way I lived. Now, I didn't do it on the outside. I tried to always do the right thing, but I lived very selfishly. And since my experience, I try not to. My earnest effort is to bring the presence of that love that I felt there here. And that's my hope, is that as you read this book, if you could connect to that unconditional love that's there for all of us, and you can really embody that, you can feel the presence of God here. You can feel the presence and love of God in your own life. And it's a real thing. It's more real than all of this. It is more real. That's the real life. That's the real existence. This is the spiritual boot camp where we get to learn to lift the weights of free agency and learn how to create using our agency. And with that, I'd like to open it up for questions. We've got a few minutes. Does anybody have any questions they'd like to kind of bring out?
If you ask a question, please let him restate it so people on Zoom can hear. Thank you.
The microphone doesn't go back there.
Yeah. If you have a question, feel free to raise your hand. Go ahead. So she's asking about politicians. I mean, people that do mean things on purpose. Unfortunately, they're not all in DC. You know, there is actively people that are mean, but I'll tell you this. I've learned very strongly that victims create victims. That in one way or another in their life, they were a victim at one time. And what I've learned in my, I call it my post-death experience. In my post-death experience, or my life since I died, I try to be a facilitator to help connect people, even the meanest people, with the light that they carry inside. Because everybody, even the darkest of people, they have that light inside. It might be very small and minute and almost dead, but a little bit of love goes a really, really long way. And when you serve somebody, especially somebody who doesn't deserve it, they know that. And it can completely activate that love inside of them. And you can see really amazing things happen to these people. And you know, there's some mean ones out there. That doesn't mean that they're any less important. To me, they're just as important as Mother Teresa and the best of us, right? But to me, I see the opportunity to love that person into a better behavior. That's what I see. Now, do I put an end date on it? Or do I put a limit to how much I'm going to love it? I can't. Because what I experienced is there's no limit to God's love. So I don't want to put a limit of the love I can share with that person. Does that make sense? So what were the spiritual lessons that Drake was trying to teach me? There's 10, 10 fundamental lessons that he had to teach me. And I call it like the energetic short bus. Nice. He was just trying to baby me through so I could get to heaven. And because he did have to baby step it for me so much, it's a beautiful thing because it does break it down to 10 simple principles. And they're principles that make total sense. When you learn about them, they are in the book. But as you break them down each individually, you learn and you can feel, you know, it's not for everybody, but for most people, they're going to identify with these 10 eternal principles that really connect to their core. And it doesn't matter your religion, doesn't matter what faith you follow, or if you have no faith. These are 10 really good principles that can help you connect to the universe or connect to your creator, connect to God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the goal is to, she says, the goal is to increase our energy of love to essentially achieve the end goal of allowing ourselves to raise our frequency of love or raise our understanding or ability of love. And love is the spiritual muscle we're here to work out. It is. And it's a really a beautiful thing that if we can learn the power of creation when we have love energy, we can really create a beautiful thing, really beautiful things.
What killed you? What affected your life? Did you need treatment?
So besides the limp and the twitch, nothing, no, just kidding. I don't limp or twitch. Now there is some small, oh yeah, I'm going to restate. So what is it that killed me and is there any lasting effects? Yes, there is. I was plagued with dental issues for years because when my body was seizing, I was just like hyper fracturing all my molars and it took years later for all of them to come apart. So that was one aspect that I did have to experience slowly, one at a time, sometimes two at a time. I was replacing all those molars or capping them over. That was one thing. The other thing is the muscle body relationship is different in me than it was before. As long as I'm really careful and vigilant with it, you'll see me drinking orange juice. As long as I'm keeping my electrolytes right and my blood sugar right, I'm okay. There's no problems. But once in a while, I will get like some type of like an attack where the body wants to go back to heaven. And it's hard because my mind wants to too. So I'm trying to stay here. But at the same time, I have a lot to live for with my family and with my legacy, which is to share my experience. Yeah.
What stopped your heart?
So what stopped it was, so he asked what stopped my heart. What stopped my heart was a product back then. It was called Fernone Dehydro. And it was a weightlifting supplement. You would take it so you could work out the same muscles every day. So you could work out your arms every day. You could work out your chest every day. And it was safe at the time. The American version was safe. And the American version was a 5% watered down solution. So it was 95% water, 5% solution. But what we didn't realize is everything you're buying online was 100% solution. So it was like taking 20 times too much. So it was, and we ordered some from online because everywhere else locally was sold out. Like all your vitamin shops and GNC, all these places, they're all sold out. So we went online to a company that they had plenty of it and they're in Thailand. So we're like, hey, ship some over. And only made that mistake once. Yeah. And I'm very leery about purchasing international supplements.
So you mentioned that this is how essentially it just gets better from here. So what's your interpretation of all the talk in the New Testament about hell?
So there is a hell. And oh yeah. So the question was, is there really a hell? I experienced the biggest form of hell was my coming back here. And is there really a hell? Yes. The real hell that exists is also our holiest of temples. And the holiest temple that you can visit daily is right here between your two temples. And that can also be your hell space. It's up to us who we allow inside that sacred space. And we can create a hell if we allow ourselves, because there's two primary religions, two real religions. The religion of love and God and the religion of fear, news, That's the two religions. It really is. But what's amazing is you can go to all these different traditional theologies, and you can really identify with both those energies in the actual religion. So in your own faith, identify it. I'll bet you can find fear, but you can also find that love. And that's the only hell that's going to exist, is the hell that we create here. But here's the hard part for a lot of people, is they're going to get all the way to this destination, and there is no end all place. It's a constant journey, and it's a beautiful journey that we get to be on eternally. We get to grow eternally. There's not like this one big waiting room with winged angels playing harps. It just doesn't exist. But it's a constant journey where we get to grow as much as we want to grow all along the way eternally. But what's beautiful is when we get there, we're given what we need to get what we want out of our existence, right? But at the same time, if we are constantly feeding the temple with fear, we're creating a hell. We are creating hell. We can experience hell here with our anxieties, with our fears. When we allow that fear energy to feed us, we can create our own hell right now. But the beautiful aspect to this is when we get to that side, there's so much more being done for us to help us out of that space, help us out of that fear space, that hell space, right? There's so much of that divine love that God has for all of us that's to help rescue us. But what some people do is they are so judgmental towards others that their hell is to be in heaven right next to the people they thought should be in hell. I'm serious. And that's hell to them. I love it because I saw people with tattoos in heaven. I saw people with burkas on in heaven. I saw people in Roman soldier outfits in heaven. I saw all sorts of societies, eras, and times in heaven. And think about this. If you would put down this certain ethnicity or put down this certain type of faith, and now you go to heaven and you're surrounded by this faith, you're like, oh, this is my hell. Because I judged them. I have to work through that. And this is what's really neat about God. God has an amazing sense of humor, and God wants us to grow. So what better way to love and to grow is to be surrounded by those who we hated our whole life, with them loving us. And how long are we going to last? Not very long. Eventually we're going to turn and realize that God's love permeates all culture, all races, all belief systems and lifestyles. God loves every single one of us, every single one of us, the way we sit right here, right now. God loves us. And God does not have this leverage of, well, if you do this, I'm going to love you more. It's not possible. It's not possible for God to love us anymore. That's powerful. God loves us how we sit right here, right now. Now, what we do with that is up to us. And the more we can recognize that when we love others, no matter what is going on in their lives, tattoos and all, lifestyles, burkas, whatever, when we love that being for who they are, when we love with that finger towards them, we're sending that love to them, love to God, and three times as much love to ourselves. We're only healing and helping ourselves to love others. We're never, ever hurting ourselves. Even though in the world's standards, you can love too much, there's no such thing. There's no such thing in the real, real universe.
I've done some really big things, but I have done some more bad things as well. And I'm just curious about, we say those things. We think it's going to be bad and good. Mm-hmm. How is that reflecting there?
I'm going to restate that question so they can hear on Zoom. So I did a lot of good things, did a lot of bad things. How does that perception play into my experience on that side? It's funny, even the bad stuff we do, as long as we're learning from it, it turns into a good thing. Now, does that mean that our bad behavior is a good thing? No, our bad behavior is our bad behavior. But as long as we're learning from it, as long as where we come from is we're moving forward hoping and helping ourselves become a better person because of it, then we can literally transmute that bad thing into a good thing. Now, if we go out and recreate it all over again, we're not learning, right? We don't need to keep making the same mistakes over and over again. But what we can do is start embracing the lesson, embracing the lesson in everything. There is a lesson in everything for us. Absolutely.
Yeah, you've been saying love, love. Can you define love without saying love?
So the question is, can I define love without saying love? Yes. Love is, and I won't say the L word, I can explain it as when I see someone in need and I lovingly go help. Oh, I said it, didn't I? When I go and selflessly seek to bring an answer to that need, I get to experience a version of the love word. Yeah. And what's really amazing is when in this life, when we're empty, when we feel darkness inside, we have a secret room inside of us that if we go serve someone else, that inside empty space gets filled with light. And it's simple things. It could be mowing someone's lawn, shoveling their walk, or just buying them lunch. And you can watch your life fundamentally change, erasing the empty spaces inside when we go and serve others. And after you keep doing that, look into the eyes of those who you're serving and you'll watch, you'll see the Creator in their eyes. Our Creator shows up for us. And when you look, you can find the Creator all around you, everywhere. Did that answer it without using too many love words? Well, I think we're right there, right, Martin? Thank you so much for coming tonight. And so my friend is awesome. And wouldn't you know it? So she asked, what happened to my friend? My friend is really, really doing well. And what industry does he work but the supplement industry? Hello? And he's an executive in the supplement industry. Hello? And part of his forte, his specialty, is implementing all natural supplements into what they call bioceuticals. So he brings a almost a pharmaceutical grade biological element coming from nature and implements it into supplements. So he does really well. He's an awesome guy. And we did use a different name for him. So you can, as you can imagine, he's working in that industry. We don't want him to have any repercussion there, but he loves the book. And I would love to also introduce real quick, Lynn, can you come down? This is Lynn. He's my my writer that write it. That's how you can tell I'm a great author. He helped me write this story, so important.
I just wanted to say hi and also let you know that when Vinny asked me to help him write his book, I didn't know how deeply he was going to end up sucking me into this. I'm grateful for that. But one thing that I wanted to make sure that you're all aware, there's a community that we're starting. If you go to livinggodslight.com, we're starting to do about once a month or every 6 weeks, a live video Q&A with Vinny. If you have any other questions, either after reading the book or anything, we've got some books here tonight. The many familiar faces, so it's good to see you all again. But if you'd like to, if you go to livinggodslight.com, you can sign up for the email list there. That's how we announce them. And you can ask any more questions you think of after this. And we'd love to have you join that community and help spread this message and spread that light with the world. It's changed my life immensely.
And we are creating a workbook that really focuses on the 10 principles that I learned to help people. Because the number one thing I get after somebody reads the experience is like, okay, that's awesome. Now what do I do? And so what we're doing is creating this workbook to help you facilitate these 10 principles into your own faith, into your own lifestyle, into your own behaviors, so that you can really self-identify and self-connect to the Creator in whatever system you're already existing. And we're excited for that. We're shooting to get that out in the next few months. So, yeah.
By the end of the year.
Yeah. Knock on wood.
thank you all for coming. I don't.
Thanks, Bob.
What is the name of the book?